Hello, and welcome back to the Video Essay Podcast. I'm your host, Will DeGravio. On today's show, we are joined by Adam Tinius, the host and creator of the popular YouTube channel, Entertain the Elk. I've been very fortunate to have collaborated with Adam on a few video essays, you know, writing the script, providing some general notes and outlines, and it was honestly one of the highlights of 2022 for me. And so I figured that talking about our collaboration, which is something that while is growing more and more common in the video essay field, is not something perhaps we first think about when we think about video essayists. So I figured it would make for a great conversation for the Video Essay Podcast to kind of talk about what the collaborative process looks like. Adam, though, beyond our collaboration, is an incredibly prolific video essayist and podcaster, and so it was great to talk to him about his creative process, how he got into this line of work, which he does full-time, and so much more. A friendly reminder that you can learn more about the Video Essay Podcast at thevideoessay.com. You can also learn more about Recycled Screenings, the Video Essay Podcast's new online screening platform for found footage and other filmmakers, at recycledscreenings.com. You can also subscribe to our free newsletter, thevideoessay.substack.com, and please also consider supporting the show on Patreon. Now, without further ado, here is our conversation with Adam Tinius. And now I am very pleased to be joined by Adam Tinius, who may be better known to folks listening as Entertain the Elk on YouTube, a prolific video essayist and someone that we'll talk more about this later that I've had the pleasure to collaborate with in my own professional life. So, Adam, it's so great to have you here with me and Emily. Welcome to the Video Essay Podcast.
Happy to be here, and you can also feel free to call me Mr. Elk, as many people seem to do. I guess I've done a poor job of actually getting my own name across on my own channel, that people in comments usually just call me Elk, which is, hey, there's worse names to be called.
Well, I think that must just be the downside, right, of having such a striking name that's not, the cinema guy or something right. Like that. Entertain the Elk. So that's your double-edged sword there.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll get into it later maybe about building the channel, but definitely there's so many channels that have like this just like their name. And at first that seemed boring to me, but now years later it's like, oh, but people have probably better connected to them because they actually know what their name is as opposed to the man behind the curtain, behind the elk curtain.
Yes, you are forever Mr. Elk. But yes, I do want to talk to you about building the channel. But first, I want to hear some more about you. And on a personal level, just excited because we've worked together, but I don't know the answers to many of these questions. And so, on the show, we talk about your videographic origin stories. So when were you first introduced to video essays and really what inspired you to create them? Were there was there a first video or two that you watched or a couple of video essayists in particular who got you excited about maybe trying this yourself?
Yeah, I think it was back in 2015. I was working at Disney. I was assisting John Turteltaub, this director. He did like Cool Runnings and he did the most recent thing he did was The Meg. So I was assisting him at the time and there was just so much downtime of reading scripts or this or that. And so a lot of this, you're also on the internet all the time, just trying to look for anything that maybe you could adapt into TV or movies. So anyways, it was probably then, just in the downtime of perusing the internet, that I don't know what the first one was. I'd probably seen other things you would probably categorize as like video essays long before it. But I remember the time when I started kind of like consuming them at a rapid pace was about 2015, and I probably at the same time saw Every Frame a Painting and Nerd Writer. I think those were like probably the two that once I kind of found them, I went down like the rabbit hole and tried to like watch all of their videos. So yeah, I think those were the two that probably stand out the most. And then probably around that time, I think Lessons from the Screenplay started putting out things. Oh God, I'm probably forgetting other people, but those are probably the three that. Was Captain Christian making videos at that time? I'm not sure. But yeah, it's so hard to look back because at the same time, there was really like an explosion of like these these few that were just putting out excellent video after excellent video.
Yeah, it definitely seems like that is the trend of people who get into video essay making, as you start reflecting on kind of your earlier memories and the earlier things you're watching. You're like, oh, that was a video essay. And I didn't even think of it in that context. Emily and I, so I have a master's in film studies. Emily is currently living that life right now. And I remember one, I was studying someone who's very high up in Hollywood, came in Cape Cod and gave a guest lecture. I don't mean to be secretive, but it was kind of, they asked us not to talk about it publicly, but it's not like a James Bond thing. But I remember one of the things that he said was that his master's degree in cinema studies and his interest in kind of criticism was kind of the main thing that informed his production background and how his sensibility and his taste. And so do you think, like, what did you learn from kind of working in production and reading scripts that prepared you for kind of wanting to start thinking critically in video essay and kind of blending maybe more criticism and theory and history with the nuts and bolts practice of filmmaking, which is essentially what video essay is, right?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, well, I got my, not my master's, but my bachelor's in film from UT Austin. And that's when I came out to LA trying to pursue the screenwriting thing. Worked on some desks, was an assistant, got coffee, nothing close to actually writing. But in all of that, you know, you're still trying to hone your own craft and researching and this and that, trying to make short films. And so certainly being on a desk and reading so many screenplays certainly helps with that. I'm not sure if it helped inform how I wrote video essays. What happened about around that same time, I never planned, obviously, on doing video essays. It's such like a new thing that I feel like a lot of us kind of like fell into and saw this potential there of this new kind of form to discuss film in a new way in this new medium. But it was when I got fired from that desk at Disney because he went to go shoot the Meg in like China or Australia or wherever they shot it. And I was just like not close to doing what I wanted to do. But I saw these people who got to make money and work from home talking about movies and TV. And I knew enough from editing, because when you're doing a lot of indie productions, you wear like so many hats. And so I knew a little editing. I knew like Final Cut 2 that I learned back in college. And I knew enough about kind of writing. I had to kind of, a lot of that was just watching video essays and learning how that kind of cadence kind of went. Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know if I learned that much from sitting on a desk, honestly. I probably learned more from listening to my directors, from like audio commentaries, listening to them like dissect their own work, and then watching video essays and like how they did it. Like, how did they take this random topic that I would never think would be interesting, but then they were able to do it and present it in this visual way, in a really succinct way, and get so much information across in like 5 to 10 minutes. And so that was just, it just felt like this whole new world that I hadn't really seen before. So it really came from a little bit of prior knowledge of just making stuff in production a little bit, but that was really just the fuel of passion to want to go talk about film, but didn't really help that much in what I was writing about, if that makes sense.
It does. And Emma's going to ask you a question after this, but I just want to ask one follow-up question to that is, could you just talk a little bit more about your own kind of filmmaking background and training? And I'm wondering how you were thinking about yourself at that time. Like, did you want to become a filmmaker? Do you think of yourself as still a filmmaker now? Or do you think of yourself, like, I think there are many ways that one can think about their video essay practice. Because on one hand, video essays are a kind of filmmaking to a degree. And do you think of yourself as a critic and a filmmaker, as a fan, as a YouTuber, as a specific form? How do you think about yourself then? And how has that kind of informed your thinking now of what your practice is, or can it not be fit into a box and how you think of it?
So from production, my limited production, I made an animated short film right out of college that won a few awards at like small festivals, but no one really cared about. And that was kind of that. But then I really wanted to focus on the screenwriting thing. I thought like, man, I need to focus in. I need to do the one thing I want to do. Because I was afraid if I tried to chase everything, I would go nowhere. What's really hard about screenwriting is that it's a very lonely profession, especially when you're chasing it. A lot of it was just time by myself in isolation, writing. Getting good at it, I thought, and placing high in some competitions, but just like nothing was catching. Wasn't so much of it is like talent meeting like opportunity. And I feel like I just wasn't meeting that opportunity. I probably honestly wasn't like hustling as well. I'm very much an introvert, which is again, is what's good about screenwriting and also being a video essayist, is that a lot of it's just time by yourself. And so a lot of it was just screenwriting for so long. So not building those connections. And so then when I made another short film, a live action short film about 2-3 years ago, like 6 months before the pandemic. I'm kind of forgetting my timeline. I've had two kids since then. So my whole brain is mushy. And so that was this learning like how to actually direct people and humans and not animated stop motion things and working with that. And it was really cool getting to take almost like educate myself from what I've learned from, you know, I did an essay on like Stanley Kubrick and lighting, or how Martin Scorsese talked about, I love when Scorsese talks about visual literacy and how the camera is this way of communicating to the audience. And so I basically made almost like a silent film that was just the camera doing the heavy lifting of, you know, push in, tilt up, you know, pan, and whatever, what kind of angles we were at and what we were doing and fast editing. So it was really fun getting to take the things I've been teaching myself and trying to teach others from what I've learned of directors and video essays and trying to incorporate that into my film and make it better. And I think it did, it succeeded to a certain degree, but I'm still trying to make films. I'm still definitely trying to pursue that. I think, I don't know. I don't know if the goalposts keep moving back or if the goalposts just change, because I think I was chasing trying to be in a writer's room, but now I don't know if I want to do that anymore, because now I've grown comfortable being with my wife and kids and getting to work from home and be my own boss, which is amazing about being a YouTuber and being a video essayist. If you're fortunate to kind of get to that place where you're able to choose your own hours. And so, but I mean, I think you asked this and about the way that I view being a video essayist. I'll be honest that I think for the longest time I was like embarrassed about it to a certain extent, because I think describing or calling yourself a YouTuber just made me feel like really small. And I think that was like a prejudice probably that I had just about what that is, and something that I'm still, I think there's like a big like inferiority complex just in general, maybe with me, but also trying to just make it out here in LA where so many lame conversations start with like, oh, what's your IMDb kind of look like? Or what have you done? Who do you know? I know this person, blah, 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 blah. So it always kind of feels like a peeing contest or whatever. And so I think having that and now being like, well, now I'm a YouTuber. Part of it felt like I failed at being a filmmaker. And now it felt like I was lumped in with, 7-year-olds who are talking about their favorite cartoon characters. And I don't know, like I would talk to my friends and I'd be like, who were like physicians and lawyers. And I'm like, hey, I make video essays on YouTube. I'm a YouTuber. And they're like, oh yeah, one of my clients today was this 5-year-old. He's a YouTuber also. And so it's really hard to sometimes, even though that's true and anyone can be a YouTuber, which is cool about it. I think I sometimes get embarrassed by it, whether it feels like a failure to one degree, failing at one thing and still striving to do this other thing. I think I talk to other video essayists, and what I say is I'd love to get to the point where someone talks about something that I make. I think that's a place I'd like to get to. I love getting to talk about my film and TV heroes and people I admire and their craft, but that's not all I want to do. But then the other thing is like, again, I'm also really happy with where I'm at. And like I was saying, I love getting to work from home, sit in my own comfortable clothes in my house and drink my own coffee. And I get to actually see my kids, as opposed to a lot of production jobs when you don't get to see your kids. And so I feel very like blessed and fortunate to be a YouTuber and to have this opportunity to get to just make videos from my home and get to put them out and for people to actually care and see them. Yeah. I think I'm fighting less and less of that embarrassment and being super happy that I'm building my own business and trying to grow something from the ground up.
I appreciate the honesty that you just laid out for us. I think
trying to be on, you know, I'm going to be real and raw here on this podcast, guys.
Well, that's the thing. I think the whole reason we do this podcast, I think, is at the end of the day to say that what people like you are doing is a form of art and it should be discussed and treated as such. And I think the idea that somehow YouTube being a YouTuber is somehow like easy or that there isn't a ton of labor and practice and skill and time that goes into this is just like so not true, especially, you know, just because you are working with images that, albeit, you know, a Hollywood production was created by dozens, if not hundreds of people in a ton of time. Like, I don't mean to minimize that, but I think we can walk and chew gum at the same time. And I totally appreciate really everything that you're saying.
I wonder if part of it was my age too. I don't know, sometimes in the video essay I feel like a dinosaur sometimes because I'm 36, married with two kids, and I don't know that many other video essayists who I think have kids. I'm sure they do, maybe they don't talk about it, but a lot of them tend to be single, tend to be in college or right out of college. So I wonder even if for that generation, YouTube was different for them and it was something to like strive for. And maybe they knew more people who were essayists and they grew up with YouTube. Where for me, I was maybe in high school when YouTube kind of blew up. And so already it had this connotation of, oh, that's a place for like cat videos and 3-second videos, that old school YouTube. That was cool and really unique and dynamic in its own way. But it felt like it was like childish endeavors as opposed to, no, this is a legit career path that people can take. So I wonder if that's part of the stigma that I'm trying to fight in my own head about how YouTube is looked at from different generations, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Can you talk a little bit about how you started your YouTube channel, how you got it off the ground to what it is today?
I think I first, you had to come up with a name, and I think I'm not a great designer. I've gotten better over the years and learned more editing and learned more things like that, but I didn't. I was like, man, I want a cool graphic. I want something that kind of stands out a little bit, but I'm not really good at it. So maybe an animal would be easy. So I tried to build something around an animal. So there was seriously me at diners just doing some kind of alliteration of animals. There was different iterations where it was going to be an owl or a bear, maybe an owl bear for my D&D fans. But I think it just went into elk. I don't know how I got there. A lot of people have asked me how I came up with the name Entertain the Elk. Just fell into it. It sounded cool. I think also I didn't want to have, Will, I think you mentioned earlier about like having the names that are very much like cinema in the name or film. And I wanted to talk about that. But one of my essayists who I probably have admired the most over the years has been Nerdwriter and how he can talk about anything and make it really interesting in the video essay format. And so I know I didn't want to pigeonhole myself into just film and TV. So I thought entertainment was kind of more, or entertain was kind of more encompassing of more genres or mediums of art. So anyways, that's how I kind of came along with that. And so then with making the first video, it was kind of like, well, what do I know the most about? And Kubrick was my favorite director in college and probably is still now. And I did a whole class, like one-on-one with a professor on Kubrick and made my own class and did my own studies on his film. So I was like, okay, I know that the best. So that way, if I'm talking about something, if someone calls me out, you know, in the comment section, it's like, at least I know this. I'm not completely talking out of my butt here through research and what I know. But then also, I was so afraid that so many videos have been done on Stanley Kubrick. What's something that hasn't been done to death? And so I think a lot of that was just like searching online, searching keywords of what I wanted to do to make sure that there wasn't already like a million videos about that. so it didn't look like I was copying someone. And what I talked about in my class in college and I didn't see people talk about was his use of practical lighting. And so it was just finding something I liked, a topic I liked that felt unique, and then trying to examine that and present that in a unique and fun way. And so I did one on Stanley Kubrick. It's called Stanley Kubrick Practical Lighting. And I just got so lucky with timing. Timing is everything. And I feel like I was part of that second generation of video essayists. I could be wrong if someone's more has studied actually more probably like yourselves. But I feel like there was like the nerd writers, Patrick Willems, Lindsay Ellis. But I felt like a lot of the second generation were people who like loved them and wanted to like kind of copy them, or not copy them, but you know, were inspired by them, I guess I'll say, and wanted to make video essayists. So I felt like I was a part of that second generation before it really became like oversaturated and everyone was doing video essays. And so I feel like I got on a good time where people were still thirsty and wanted more video essay channels. I remember when I put out my Stanley Kubrick Practical Lighting, so many comments were like, oh good, another video essayist. I'm always looking for more of these. I don't get those comments anymore because now the medium is blown up and it's massive. But at the time, almost 6 years ago, it was still seemed kind of a novelty and new. And so I got lucky that my first video, it's currently sitting at about 500,000 views. So it was a pretty big, I got really lucky out of the gate that I had a video that at the time probably quickly got to 100, 200K. And so, I mean, that was the beginning of it. And then at that point it was, I think I was on unemployment. And so I was able to have some money coming in while my wife was also working, but she's a high school English teacher and we're living in LA. So we needed two incomes to survive out here. So having that, so it allotted me the time and space to just focus on the channel for a bit. And I did that for a couple months and made $0, as you do when you're starting off, you're just trying to build something. And so eventually I think about for the first, so after probably about 5 or 6 months when unemployment ran out, I had to get some temp work, but I didn't want to get a full-time thing because I wanted to still dedicate time to the channel and I wasn't finding anything that was like glamorous enough to want to be a full-time thing. So a lot of my first year or two was just trying to take temp jobs, doing data entry, being assistants at like studios randomly here and there, and working on the channel at nighttime. So it felt like I was kind of working two jobs for a while as I was trying to grow. I think after a year, I had the day Family Guy died, and that was like my first like instant explosion of a video. Kind of like the day The Simpsons died too, was pretty big at the time. But the day Family Guy died was like insane. It's still like the best day I've ever had, where I had like a million views in a day, I think. And at that point, that's when sponsors started reaching out, and I started, and ever since then I was still temping at that point too, and was for the next year or two. But at least then, after about a year or so, I started getting some money coming in. And so that was great that I was actually getting paid to talk about what I was doing. People actually cared enough to watch the channel. So that was probably the beginnings of Entertain the Elk, was unemployment, making videos, getting lucky because it was still early enough at a time when people were thirsty for this, and also at a good time for YouTube when people were actually able to find these videos. So yeah, that's probably the origins of Entertain the Elk.
Thank you for that history. I love this idea of the second wave of YouTube video essays. I want like the oral history. It's like the French New Wave. Like I want to track each wave of video essayists. I think that would be, maybe that's a project that we can undertake, Emily, at some point. But you mentioned your video essay, The Day The Simpsons Died, which is from 2017, which I think is the year around, that's the year you started the channel. And so this has become sort of an ongoing video essay series for you, The Day X Died, typically a television show, and The Day X Was Born. And you said, as I said, The Day The Simpsons Died was the first one, has over 4 million views. You said the Family Guy one really was what exploded. And so could you just walk us through the origins of the project, and specifically, what are the benefits for you as an essayist and creator for having an ongoing series, both in terms of your own workflow and also the relationship that you have with your audience?
Yeah, man, the day the Simpsons died, well, it's such a blessing and a curse in some ways that I'll get to. It was crazy that it blew up that fast. It was so that's what basically made my channel and probably has continued to. And how I mentioned kind of growing up, not so much with YouTube, I feel like I missed so much about YouTube culture. And so like things like clickbait, I heard of, but I didn't really understand stand what that meant. And things kind of like those kind of YouTube isms that are so normal now. And so when I was doing The Day the Simpsons Died, again, I was just looking for topics that I knew a lot about. And I grew up on The Simpsons, and I think I was just searching for something to talk about. I was like, that was my favorite show growing up, but I haven't watched it in over a decade or longer. And I was like, maybe there's something there with that. And that name, that title just kind of was like, oh, that sounds interesting. I didn't know it would have such a response that it did. Again, good and bad. Bad in the sense of I never wanted my channel to carry like a negative tone towards like media. I never wanted to like crap on anything. That doesn't sound fun. There's plenty of that already on YouTube of just hating on stuff for like no reason. I never wanted my channel to also be like I never would view myself as a critic in the sense of like, here's why I like this and here's why I don't like this. Because that's, then you're hearing my opinion, which is cool and valid, but I wanted more to like educate and talk about the form and why things work and why things don't from like more of a structural or from like a, from reading books on screenwriting and directing and things like that. So anyways, I just really honestly fell back into that and again, fell back into some vitriol that I didn't necessarily mean to have. Videos like that get a reaction because people think you're attacking something that they love. And so they're going to either agree with you or they're going to jump to like defend it and say, well, you're wrong, which is cool. That's what's unique and cool about YouTube, that everyone can come and share their voice in the comment section, hopefully in a polite way. But yeah, that one blew up and I never thought about doing a series. I think it was almost a year later, or maybe 6-7 months, where my brother and some other friends were like, man, this one blew up. You should do another one like that. And I was like, I wonder if people would want that. Was it like a one-time thing? I doubt people want to see this again. I wonder if they would be like, yeah, you've already done this. And so I also didn't know, like, was it because it was a cartoon? Is that why it blew up? I was so new to YouTube and I'm still like honestly trying to be like, why does this work and this doesn't work? It doesn't make sense to me sometimes why certain things work and others do or whatever. And so I was like, well, the closest thing to Simpsons I could think about is like Family Guy. There's a lot of crossover there. And so, yeah, doing that and that one just exploded. And so I was like, man, I think I have something here, even though I don't know. The reason I'm kind of like torn, but the reason I'm not like, yeah, I'm the most proud about these videos is because when it's a series, it's really nice to have something to fall back on. If you don't know what you're going to write, it's really easy to fill in, do the next thing. And there's a built-in audience for that. That's great. And I'm glad I have that. And that's probably why I'm able to make this be my full-time gig. Because if I'm having a slump of a couple of videos in a row, I can do with a day something died, whatever. And I know people are going to watch it. And that's really nice. That's really nice, almost like of a safety net to land on if things aren't going well. But for me, creatively, it's not as fun because you're doing the same pattern. You know what's going to happen. Now, there can be unique things in there. And I try to make them fun by, again, not just crapping on something, but being like, here, let's dissect something that unique to this show, a term. I did The Day SpongeBob SquarePants Died, and I was able to examine like the term flanderization and like what that meant, what that looks like, examining like terms or examining episodes and why they work, compare tips as they don't. I try and make it more analytical than just I'm ranting and raving, because again, I didn't ever found that to be interesting. And then I did those and then I was like, is it just a cartoon thing? Maybe let me try some live action shows. And I did The Walking Dead. That was massive. And I did How I Met Your Mother. And so it just became this thing where it's like, I'm stupid if I don't keep doing it, because this is where I'm getting the most money and the most fans. People know me for this. And that's been really great. And that is really cool. And I'm glad that so many people know me as the Day Something Died channel. But then the double-edged sword of that is that's not all I want to do. I want to do more experimental stuff and weird stuff and talk about, I want to talk about a movie, a silent Russian movie from the 20s, or I want to talk about this painter who I like, or this novel that's obscure. And a lot of comments are then like, do another Day Something Died video. And you're like, okay, I will, but did you like this thing that I made? Whatever. And so it's just hard that so many people, to be known for something is cool, but it really sucks to be known for one thing and then that's kind of the only thing, as opposed to, did you watch my video on Hemingway? No. Okay. I guess YouTube either didn't share it with you or that's not what you were here. I mean, I don't know. I guess we all have those YouTube channels that we go to for that one thing and they're known for that. And maybe they make other stuff, but we know them for that one thing. Actually, in preparation for this talk, I was on Twitter yesterday and this guy was talking about, here's how you become great at YouTube. And one of his points was not focusing on one topic. Wait, your audience channel should serve one audience. That's what it says. Your YouTube channel should serve one audience. If you do that, it'll be easier for you to make great content for your audience and easier for YouTube to find your audience. So I think there's some truth there where if you're known for that one thing, do that one thing and you'll become known for that and YouTube will know how to share it and people will know what you are. So if I did my channel completely on the Day Something Died, I'm sure I would be a lot more popular than I am. But for me, that's like not interesting. That's not nearly as creatively interesting. And so I think I've done myself a disservice in some ways by putting myself in a Day Something Was Born or Died box, but I do make the most money from those and I have an audience because of that. But it really just, I wish people would come to me for my voice and would know that I'm going to make something interesting. Again, that's why I like Nerdwriter. He could talk about a film I love. He could talk about a poet I've never heard of, or a painter, or some economic standard, or some politician, something that I would never seek out myself, but I trust his voice and I trust him to make something entertaining that I will enjoy. And that's what I've tried to do, whether I'm talking about a band or whatever. I hope that people trust the Elk's voice, me, Adam Tinius, that like come to me, that I'm going to make something educational and fun that you'll like. And I think I'm still trying to cultivate that audience. And it's been hard not putting myself in that hole and trying to have other videos that blow up that aren't the Day Something Died. So I don't know. I feel like I'm stuck in some ways. I feel like I'm trapped by this thing that I've built. And again, it's not necessarily all bad, but I wish people would also watch the other unique stuff that I make.
Some people, and I count myself in this group, like, you know, a couple years ago, thought, oh, YouTube means that you as a video essayist can make whatever you want, whenever you want. And in some ways, I think people think that maybe because YouTube is a self-publishing platform, right? But you are inherently restricted in many ways because you need to pay the bills and you need to, as you said, you're building a business. Like, that's just the simple fact of it. And I think it was Thomas Flight, and I apologize if this is incorrect, but I think he said on a past episode, you know, oh yeah, if I make a couple videos a month and the first one does really, really well, then I know that in my next one, I can kind of experiment and play around a little bit. And it seems like that's the delicate balance that you're always trying to draw. And I think that the first video of yours that I saw was one that I would say is more experimental. And it was your 36 Westerns timed to the first gunshot. But I'm just wondering if you could speak more to experimentation as risk for you and how you think about it in terms of the algorithm and whether you think there's enough room for experimentation on YouTube in general.
I think about Steven Soderbergh. I think I heard a few years back, maybe a decade now, he talked about how he would do one for the studio and how he would do one for like himself. And so he would do Ocean's 11, but then he would do this like indie doll making movie called Bubble, I think, whatever. He would do the biggest studio film, and then he would do the ultra smallest indie obscure art house film. And he struck that balance. And I think I've tried to do that on my channel where I'll do a Marvel video, I'll do Christopher Nolan, Batman, whatever is big. But then I want to do like Rashomon, or I want to do Sigur Rós, this Icelandic band that I really like and just want to talk about because I just want to talk about them because they interest me. So I'm kind of like trying to do one for them and trying to do one for myself. And I think also doing the 36 Westerns Time to a Gunshot, some things just sound interesting in your head. And you're like, I just need to like make this now to exercise it from my brain because I want to see this. So again, that's part of like, I'm doing this for myself. Is there an audience for this? I have no idea. But if I'm just trying to chase an audience and that audience isn't there and I'm just making stuff that I think will appease the audience, then like no one's happy. But maybe I'll make something that I like and I'm proud of. And then if it catches, man, that's the best of both worlds. So making that, and after making that, I think Luis from Beyond the Frame commented, it was like, dude, this is like a short film. You should submit this to some like festivals. And I didn't, but I liked that idea of, man, you're right. I can make a video essay that has its own form that maybe could stand as its own thing. Like you can take this art form and you talk about it, but in the way you talk about it, you almost create your own piece of art. And I thought that was fascinating. So I've tried to do that at times. I did, I don't know if you saw it. I did it a couple years ago. It was how Christopher Nolan builds intensity. And I was talking about Dunkirk and I was talking about how he does cross-cutting from like different scenes that are going parallel. And I structured that entire video essay as a cross-cut. And so, and they all like convert the essay that I'm making with the movie that I'm showing with examples of his filmography. They all cross cut together until they converge at the end and it wraps up. And I was really proud of it. I was like, wow, I felt like I just made almost like a short film or the way I told it ended up being a unique thing in itself. And so I think I'm not always able to do that. But when I'm able to chase that and change the form and change the genre based on what I'm talking about, that's really exciting to me. I did one on Sondheim and how he wrote Sunday in the Park with George. And I explained that while using, because that's about a pointillist painter who uses dots. And so I do that whole paint, that video essay in close-ups of the painting. Whatever the name of that painting is, I'll butcher it if I try and pronounce it. But I did that really close up of like doing dots. And it's all you're seeing is dots up close. Did they always land? I don't know, but it's more fun to me. I feel like I'm directing at that point. And I feel like I'm writing something that has its own artistic value. Trying to adapt the form and make something that has its own artistic weight is really interesting to me now and really fun.
I'm also wondering about your collaboration. So I guess this question goes to the both of you, but I know you hire writers when drafting scripts. At least you've done that for a couple of videos and you've done that with Will. So why does that process work for you? And what was the process like, Will, writing it and then Adam adapting that script into a video?
Yeah, that's been a newer thing probably in the past year or two. And I think it was just desperately trying to make more videos because I was the bottleneck for everything. I am so slow at writing. And sitting down to a blank page and just trying to write, I am just so terribly slow at it. And so I just knew I needed some other creative minds out there who are brilliant in their own ways that they dissect and their own perspectives. And just trying to work with them just to help me write some stuff. And I still write my own things occasionally, but knowing that I can write something and I have someone else who's working on something and another person working on something, and it just feels like more plates are spinning as opposed to I'm doing one video at a time and I'm doing every step in there at the time. And I think I was at the place finally where I could afford that. For the longest time, I was just trying to not go back to being an assistant. And so I just needed all the money I could do. I needed to wear all the hats I could. I still edit all my videos. I would like to find some editors in the future. I just haven't figured out that yet. I think I'm still, from hearing other essayists talk about collaborating, I know I'm prone to this. I'm afraid to share things because I'm afraid others won't do it good enough, or they won't be able to match my voice, or I'll end up having to like rewrite it and do it all myself. And I think it's just been a lot of trust. And the way I met Will and a few other writers was, well, putting out a call of who wanted to maybe write some stuff for the channel, and then giving them a test essay that I paid them for. That was like, here's a topic. Can you make something interesting from this topic? And a few people were, and were able to make something better than I thought they'd be able to do. And so, yeah, working with Will. Will, was our first short together, was it the Spaghetti Westerns? Yeah, I very rarely give them nothing. I try and say, I think with that one, and correct me, Will, I think I was like, again, I like Spaghetti Westerns. What's something unique about that we can talk about? Leone does a lot of close-ups. What does that mean? Maybe we can break down, here are some articles I found that talk about it. From all this crap I'm giving you, can you try and come up with an outline for this, or some way that you can take all this information and put it in a digestible way? Will blew me away with the first time working with someone, and first time working with him. I was like, oh man, this is really good. And you communicate back and forth together, and the lines of communication are open. Here's an outline. Work on this. Okay, maybe move these things around. I like what you did there. Maybe switch this. Or you did an example here. Could you add another example? Because you spent a lot of time over here, but you kind of were fast here, and I was interested here, and I wanted to hear a bit more. Could you add some more there? And so that's kind of what it's been so far. And when he sends it back over, then it's just me mainly trying to adapt that to my own voice. Whether if I feel like I might have said something maybe a little bit more jokey here, knowing myself, I would have gone on a tangent over here on this thing that I wouldn't expect Will or another writer to know, but it's, I know myself that I'm interested in this one thing, so I really quickly want to diverge and go over here for a second, and then I'll come back to the essay. So it's been a case-by-case thing. I think Will's written a couple more for me, and I've had some other writers do some stuff, and some are more ready to go than others, but some of it's just like, this is kind of dragging a bit, or this is a bit chunky, or honestly, sometimes it's like, I have to edit this thing and I have another deadline coming up, so I'm just going to cut out some of these things because I like it, but it doesn't necessarily add to anything, and removing it won't make the video suffer. So it's kind of like just figuring that out. Honestly, I'm new to it, and I'm still trying to figure it out. I'm looking at the Spaghetti Western. That was only 9 months ago. It feels like a lot longer ago, but so we've only been collaborating for 9 months, and maybe we've done two videos together? Three? You did that one? You did the Marvel one?
Yeah, two and a half, maybe, because the Disco Star Wars is the most.
The Disco Star Wars. No, that's three, for sure. The Disco Star Wars one. Yeah. That one was great too. Yeah, so just trying to find these different topics and different angles that I haven't seen like done to death, and trying to bring something new to it. And the most that I can do to help the writers that I'm hiring, I try and give them like, here's what I am interested in. Here's what I want you to write about. Here's some articles. Here's kind of like a loose idea of what I think you could do. And now please go to it and form it so it actually is an essay.
I think for me, in writing the Spaghetti Western one, which was the first one, it was kind of shocking because I think your voiceover was most of what I wrote. I remember clicking on the video for the first time after I sent it to you, like when it went live. Because, you know, once I sent you the script, it's like, I'm not involved at all. And I was just like, oh my God, what's this going to be like? And it was really cool to see. And I feel like when I was writing it, being familiar with Adam's work, I was trying to like imagine you reading it, Adam. Like that's what makes them so pleasurable to write, is because not that the standard of writing is lower, but you're not writing it to be like published in a magazine. Like you're writing it in a more sometimes conversational way, sometimes more, you know, it's like a totally different enterprise. And so for me, I have to say, I always felt that I could never, that video essays that were written out as a written essay and then became like adapted were kind of something different, in that they really had to like engage with something audiovisually that the text wasn't doing. And your work does that. But it actually made me less conservative in that view, because it showed me that the act of adaptation, even when you have a written script, really brings so much from it, and being removed from it made that evident to me.
I've had people reach out to me and they were like, man, you should take your essays and put them like in a blog form. And I think if you're able to do that, you're doing the video portion a disservice, because it needs to be a different thing. Not always. I mean, I'm sure people can excel at like, here's just the entire text, and I'm just putting it in a video. But if you're able to take that and the video to combine it to something new, that's when it's really special. And so a lot of video essays that I've thought about, it's like, I can't just adapt that into a book. It wouldn't make sense, because the video is doing some heavy lifting at times, showing you something or cueing you into something with music or a shot. So you're right. I think when you're writing, you kind of need to have, you need to know that this isn't the last place where it's going to live. I need to take this and I need to make it better when I get, and I'm editing it, to give it that extra oomph.
I think we can move on to talking about one of the most moving video essays that I think I've ever watched, which is your How Movies Help Me Process My Mother's Death. I guess the first question is, like, what is the origin story of this video essay? When did you decide that you wanted to tell this story in video essay form?
Yeah, that's like one of like the hardest things I've ever made, obviously. I think I'd never like grieved like that before, to the extent where it's like, I just want to do nothing, but you can't just do nothing forever. You need to, but it felt wrong to just go about life like it's normal, when it felt like anything but. And so I was trying to find a way to process that like intense grief I was going through, and try and use it in an artful way that maybe could like help myself, certainly, and hopefully help others. It was such a great exercise too, and a reminder, even like in my own writing and filmmaking, you hear so much about how the best films, or when people are like communicating like a truth and are like being real and raw. And I wonder if secretly, or maybe subconsciously, I was always kind of like holding back and just writing about fun stuff. I'm talking about more about my filmmaking, where it's like, I'm just talking about a thing. How much truth am I getting? What am I bringing to this that's like evoking something deep and raw from like your soul? That's like the good shit with filmmaking. And I was like, man, this is like an opportunity to just like bare my soul in something that I'm making, not knowing how it's going to be perceived or received, but like, I just felt like I needed to be naked. And if I didn't, I felt like I was doing myself a disservice, maybe like my own mom a disservice, but I just wanted to like be real about it. And so I was like, man, I need to keep working. I can't just be sad here in my room forever. And I thought it was a perfect way to work, to make something, but to keep processing that grief with it. And so, yeah, for those out there listening who haven't seen it, it's just, I, again, trying to make a short film almost in a weird way, talking about my mom and our history of watching films together, movies together, about how she was a cheerleader about me trying to pursue film and YouTube or whatever. And it was just like talking about how death has been like portrayed also in film, in my own experience of like seeing it firsthand, everyone's is different, but like what I thought rang true or some films that hit on some things that were real or at least touched me that I connected with. It was really hard to make that video. A lot of crying at cafes just randomly, watching video clips and like writing about stuff. That was hard. I mean, again, views wise, it didn't, but also it felt gross to try and do a clickbait like title on this video. That was about my mom dying. But that's far and away the best comments and feedback I've ever gotten on a video. The comment section in there was just making me cry all the time when I was reading it. People were just like being so real. It was the most life-giving, I think, a YouTube comment section has ever been, where it was just people being so nice. There wasn't just mean people out there. It was because that was a scary thing too. I thought about just turning off comments for it because God forbid some troll out there or someone wants to like crap on a video essay. That feels a lot different when you're talking about Parks and Recreation. You're like, okay, I'm that's not me, as opposed to this, that is very much me. But thank God it was met with open arms, and it was reciprocated really well and met really well. And yeah, it was just really beautiful. And it was challenging in the best ways that I think like good art hopefully is. And it was just another good reminder. We talked about at the beginning of this podcast, people call me Mr. Elk, and that's fine. And that's cool. I wish I had done, and I'm trying to get better at getting myself across, because I think that's how you connect with people. That's how you say, oh, well, he's talking about whatever. I don't know that, but I like that guy. I like that YouTuber or that video essayist. I want to watch what he has to say because he has a good voice. Not the sound of his voice, but what the things that he's saying. I like that guy. And I know a lot of I'm sure you're the same way. A lot of my favorite YouTubers, it's like you feel like you're kind of friends with them to a certain extent because like you see their face all the time. And I purposefully like withheld my face for the longest time on my videos and trying to get better about just connecting with my audience and being real and being raw. Certainly not as always as real and raw as that, because I don't know how much more real and raw you can get than talking about how you're grieving your own mother dying. But I'm trying to be better at connecting with my audience and wanting to, to make a connection, even though I'm just talking to a screen. I'm hoping that people, it really showed me just the effect, how video essays in themselves like can be art and can cause, can stir an emotion in someone and can connect with someone, as opposed to just shitting on a cartoon. Or, you know, like the art form is real and it's awesome and it's beautiful and it can do some really cool things if people are wanting to do it in a unique way. One of my favorite writers is Hunter S. Thompson, and I actually wrote about him in one of my videos about gonzo journalism and about how that was the forefront of like not just talking about a race at the Kentucky Derby. I'm going to put myself in the story, and me experiencing the Kentucky Derby becomes this new thing, and now I've created this new form. With me at the forefront being your Virgil guide through hell or through whatever it is. I know a lot of people will do that through like, there's like a genre of video essayists about like, I'm getting drunk as I'm talking about this thing. And I wonder if that's kind of part of it. If like, here's me talking about a thing, but it's affected me. And now I'm part of the process of watching the thing. That can be part of it. This one was very much with my mother dying was like, here's just me. Here's me going through this thing. And I think that I'd like to throw myself in there more. I'm having a hard time figuring out how to do that on the regular because I spent so much of my time wanting to push myself down in the sense of
it's not about me. It's about the art form that I'm talking about. Don't look at me. I'm not going to show you my face. I just want to talk about this movie, and I want to educate you and all of us about the form.
And now we want to transition over to talking about a video essay that Adam selected, which is called The Social Network 10 Years Later. And Adam, if you could talk a little bit about this piece and why you chose it for us.
Had you guys seen any work from the Royal Ocean Film Society? He's another like online video essay friend. Again, I keep using that second tier, but I feel like we were kind of like coming up together, and he has some of the best editing. He is amazing. And I think you mentioned like, what's a video that I always come back to, or one of the first ones inspired me. And I couldn't think of one of the first ones that like inspired me. There's so many, and I had a hard time finding one, but I do often come back to this one when I'm thinking about different ways to present information. He did one before this talking about Saul Bass posters even. And I remember that was the first one where I saw where it was like, oh man, the entire, he had also for that one, the entire frame was a poster size and all the information is within a poster size. And so I thought he took that idea and like brought it to its fullest in The Social Network. So for people who haven't seen this, the idea is, and he even opens it, I believe, saying like, it's best to watch this on your phone. And that's because the frame that he's working in isn't your normal 16:9, whatever, you know, that you see for your TV. It looks like you're holding your phone, and it literally looks like you're on Facebook and you're browsing the feed and you're scrolling up. And there's so much detail in this that it blows my mind. I rewatched it again yesterday. And to the point where he has like the battery length in the top right and the time at the top that tracks with it. It looks like you're on your phone. And so as he's just, again, he's just talking about The Social Network. You could have presented this with images from the movie and no one would have said boo. It would have been a normal video essay. But how do you take it, and in your director or editor's mind, how do you present that in a unique way that just kind of transforms it and makes it something new? And so as he's talking and you're scrolling the feed, you're accompanied with where you normally would see like your buddy and their little icon, their profile picture and their name. In that case, you see like an image from The Social Network and that, and you see a video playing and you see the likes and comments it has below. And as you're going up, as he references Citizen Kane or another movie, then that's like that profile picture and you see. And there's times where like you scroll to the right as you're looking at other pictures and images. It just, it was such a brilliant way that pisses me off that it was so good. Those are my favorites, like Thomas Fly and this guy that just piss you off because you're like, damn, that's so good. And I wish I would have thought of that before them, because like you can't do it now because they've beaten you to it, and doing it would just be copying it. But yeah, the essay itself doesn't like blow your hair back in the written portion of it, but it's one of those ones where like the beauty of like the visuals and the video portion that just elevates it and makes it its own thing that could never live on a page.
I think this is a great example of the attention to detail and the formal precision really gives the argumentation a lot of authenticity. And I think that's especially important when you're working with something like The Social Network or just a director like David Fincher, where there is so much out there on Fincher and this film in particular. I think that is the way that you convey as a creator your kind of mode and way of thinking and the amount of time and energy you've spent working through the material. When it's that self-evident, and again, this is not like a universal statement that all videos have to have this polish or whatever, but for me, that was just, it was like, whoa, I was blown away. And I was like, here's someone who's really thinking about not only the film, but the ways in which the technology that we're interacting with every day shapes our view of the film. And so that form of precision really wears the creator's thinking right on the sleeve.
Seeing a video that's like, oh shit, I've never seen a video presented this way before. And I've tried to do that, like I mentioned, with my Christopher Nolan cross-cutting video. I did a Lighthouse video that like, oh, I want to kind of do it all black and white, like the movie. And I want the frame to be the 3x4 or whatever it is that's like the movie. And it's not as stark and as jarring as the phone kind of angle. When I did Come and See, that just came out a couple days ago, it was all about faces. And I was like, maybe I can make that be my phone length kind of video. But then you think like, am I robbing people of like the beautiful frame of the cinematography? So it gets hard to kind of know how to do it. You want to respect the form and not just like cut it off. But yeah, it's just when you see good video essays that just push it and do it and present it in a unique way, because anyone can write an essay, and it's some better, certainly better than others. But it's when you bring yourself into it, like you talked about, or when you can present it in a frame that's different, or lay it out differently, or jump around, or just anything that makes it different, that gets me really excited. And so the more you can watch and hopefully not copy other people because you're really impressed with their work. Also it just motivates you to push yourself to get better at editing or everything else I listed.
Absolutely. Well, I think that is some perfect advice and wisdom to end our conversation on. Adam, thank you so much for joining the Video Essay Podcast. It's been a real pleasure to have you.
Thank you. Yeah. Anyone out there, go check out Entertain the Elk on YouTube. I also, if I can shamelessly plug my podcast, I have a podcast that again is nothing to do with film. It would probably be better if it was to get cross promotion. But if you're into Dungeons and Dragons or classic literature, I play with my wife and some friends. It's called Of Mice and Men and Monsters. And my wife's a high school English teacher, and the idea is that she's the dungeon master, and we play through classic pieces of literature. We've played through like Frankenstein, Moby Dick. We just finished Macbeth and The Great Gatsby. So if you like that, if you like TTRPG podcasts or classic literature, want to learn some stuff, we also do book reports in between each book, where my wife, kind of the master teacher, sits down and walks through the importance of education, because again, we really care about people reading and promoting good books and literature and people engaging with it in a different way. So again, Of Mice and Men and Monsters. And then, yeah, my YouTube channel, Entertain the Elk. Would love to see you guys there. Thanks, guys, for having me. This was a lot of fun.
The Video Essay Podcast is hosted and produced by me, Will DeGravio. Emily Subin Ko is the show's associate producer. She also edited this episode. Please visit thevideoessay.com for more information. Thanks again for listening.